chapter 10, verse 13. Normally, I don't give you one verse, but we're going to talk about one verse. But I want to tell you, there's a guy that he's about to have surgery. It's a father, and it's a pretty extensive surgery. And he has asked that his one and only son, he only has one child, and he asks this son of his to do the surgery. He's a brilliant surgeon. I mean, he's a great surgeon. And the son's a little apprehensive. And so right before he's going to administer the anesthesia, he says, "Hey, can I talk to my son real quick?" And so the son comes in. He's like, "Yes, Dad. What can I do for you?" And he said, "Son, I just want you to know that I totally trust you. I really do. I trust you are a great surgeon. But," he says, "if something happens, I just want you, be calm, be cool, be collected. But if something happens to me, I just want you to be reminded that your mother's going to come live with you and your wife." No pressure. No pressure. You know, we face situations every day with a little pressure, right? We feel a little stress in life. Sometimes we hear bad news, just like, Craig is a little nervous this morning. I mean, rightly so. We hear things that stress us, that worry us, that make us wonder where we are in life. And every once in a while, I hear this phrase, "God will not give you more than you can bear." Right? You guys know that's not biblical, right? That's something that we've created from a biblical statement that's really not biblical. Because God does send things our way, and there's some things that we might feel are unbearable, but that God has sent, or that Satan has sent, or that God is working through, or things that are in our way to help make us stronger. Because God's intent for us is to be stronger. So I want us to think about this passage this morning. But as I set this up, let's remember 1 Corinthians chapter 9, as we study this on Wednesday nights, 1 Corinthians 9 is set up for Paul saying, "Hey, I want you to run this race. Don't forget to run the race," right? There's a beginning of the race, as Kelly brought out. There's an end of the race, and then there's a course set out in for us. And we talked last week about Jesus steeling himself, right? To have this iron will, to have a face like stone. He's set, he's intent, he's got purpose. And we need to have that same purpose as we run this race, because that's important. The first 12 verses of 1 Corinthians 10 deal with the lessons learned by reading about the Israelites, right? The Israelites, they were running a race too. They were trying to get to the promised land, and they just kept messing up. They succumbed to temptation. They succumbed to doubts. They decided to be idol worshipers. They decided to go in different directions than God intended for them to do. And so he set an example by giving us these examples. Paul is writing to the Corinthians. Corinth was the Vegas, right? Everybody, I mean, that's on your sheet if you're not paying attention to that part. Corinth was the Vegas of the first century. It was an evil place to live. And so many of these pagans have come to Christianity. There's folks who've come out of these idol worship. They've come out of these temples. There may be even sitting in this assembly, not this assembly, but the assembly of the Corinthians, someone who used to be a temple prostitute or engaged with the temple prostitutes. There's a lot of stuff going on in Corinth, right? I mean, it's a pretty place. So there's a temptation. There's a temptation for every single Christian just by living in Corinth. There is things all around. Not to say that it's much different in our society, but that's really important. They're dealing with idolatry and drunkenness, the temple prostitutes, as I mentioned, sexual immorality. Lots of different things are going on. And so they're going through those struggles as well. And so Paul is dealing with lots of issues. Paul is teaching about temptation. Right, he's talking about temptation. Yes, there's times when we're tempted to walk away from God because of our circumstances or struggles. And there's a lot of folks who are mad at God for allowing things to happen to loved ones that they care about. And I deal with that all the time in my counseling. And I'm talking with my friends and trying to help them understand who Jesus is and who God is. And they ultimately say, "Well, wait a minute. If God's so loving and God's so kind, then why?" Right, that comes up. But he's not talking about the pressure of losing a job. He's not talking about somebody being diagnosed with cancer. He's not talking about, your house being flooded. He's not even talking about your NFL team losing more than it's winning, right? The stress of all of that. He's dealing with temptation. And the reason that he's dealing with that in this particular context of this particular chapter 9 through chapter 10, of course, he didn't write chapters. He's writing this letter to them, is that they are struggling with temptation to go back to their former way of life. Just like the book of Hebrews is filled with all of this encouragement to not go back to where you were, right? So that's kind of where they are. God will not give us more than we can bear is a half-truth, right? Adam Hamilton wrote a book. It's called Half-Truths. And he said about this in our verse this morning, right? It's a long quote. You'll just have to stay with me and read with me, all right? The context of this verse, can we sneak it through there? I want everybody to sit too. The context of this verse in 1 Corinthians is self-discipline in the face of temptation with the hope of avoiding sin, particularly the sins of sexual immorality and idolatry. Paul is telling the Corinthian Christians that their experience is not unique. Just as the Israelites were tempted, so too the Corinthians will be, and we're being tempted. In fact, right, we're all being tempted. Jesus himself experienced temptation. This passage is not about God declining to give you more burdens in life than you can handle. It is about God helping you when you're tempted. Temptation is indeed a test of your resolve, your character, and your faith. And that's what Paul's talking about here. Not about adversity and the difficult circumstances that come into every life at some point. Paul is addressing temptation to former practices that are sinful or otherwise destructive. All right? Context. Hugely important for us as we deal with temptation. So let's read 1 Corinthians 10:13. Notice this word. No temptation has overcome you except what is common to mankind. And God is faithful. Great is your faithfulness, right? He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted, he will also provide a way out so you can endure it. So there's where the Bible speaks. And we have oftentimes thrown our own little twist on that and went, well, God's not going to give you more than you can bear. He's not talking about the everyday. He's talking about the temptation to overcome or to sin and giving you a way out in that. Okay, the Greek word in this passage is the word pyrosmos. All right, pyrosmos. It means, can you see it? Temptation. To be tempted. To be enticed to sin. That's what it means. There's no other word there, all right? So sometimes you read a Greek word, and it has a couple of meanings, and it can mean this, and it can be pushed over here, and it's like, oh, it can have this little twist on it, and so therefore we get this little teaching out of it. This word is used about 20 times in the New Testament, and in every single time it's used, it means to be tempted or temptation, all right? So that part's easy. Look at J.B. Phillips' translation. All right, just so we're totally clear on one verse. No temptation has come your way that's too hard for flesh and blood to bear. But God can be trusted not to allow you to suffer any temptation beyond your powers of endurance. He will see to it that every temptation has a way out so that it will never be impossible for you to bear it. Right? So the devil made me do it. Well, the devil maybe gave you the temptation, but God has always given us a way out, and it's up to us to see God's hand in that. Look at the Living Bible's translation. I've been using the Living Bible a lot lately, but I love this translation too. Remember this, the wrong desires that come into your life aren't anything new and different. Nothing new. Nothing's changed under the sun. Many others have faced exactly the same problems before you. No temptation is irresistible. You can trust God to keep the temptation from becoming so strong that you can't stand up against it. For he has promised this and will do what he says. He will show you how to escape temptation's power so you can bear up patiently against it. Again, he's not dealing with hard times. He's not dealing with football teams that don't lose very well. You know, I can't bear it anymore. You know, he's dealing with temptation. And why is that so very important? Because the apostles and the disciples, the followers of Christ, his son himself, succumbed to and dealt with temptation. They dealt with struggles and problems every single day of their life. And he's trying to help us understand that in the good times and in the bad times, God is faithful. And God may use those negatives, just like Kelly quoted a second ago from Romans 8:28. God's going to work out work for good the things that happen in our life. He's going to try and make things happen the best way possible. But there are going to be times in our life where we're going to struggle. We're going to go through some tough times. And sometimes, I believe this with all my heart, God sends some of those trials our way to make us stronger, to give us the resolve and the ability to stand more firm, because His picture is not about this place. His picture is about the place to come. His desire is for us to get there. And so whatever it takes to get there. You know, when I'm coaching sometimes these kids, I'll make them go through drills, and they're like, I hate this. This is stupid. You know, I'm like, well, let me tell you something. I want you to go home, and I want you to get you a mop bucket, and I want you to tie a rope around it, and I want you to get a 20-pound weight, and I want you to roll that up with your wrist, and then I want you to roll it down. And then I want you to roll it up, and then I want you to roll it down. They're like, every one of the kids, I want to be better. I want to do better. I want to be like you. I want to be able to hook the ball like you. I want to be able to throw it harder, and I want to be able to blah, 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 right? And I say, okay, then put the time in. Do this. So I tell every kid I coach, will you make me this little deal? I tell the parents, hey, you can get a mop bucket, you can get whatever you want, get a cinder block, get a bunch of wood, tie it to it, and do that. Guess how many kids have done that since I've been coaching them? One. You're close. One. I know everybody's like, none. One kid. And that kid now is probably the best bowler out of all the kids I've coached. He's the only one that shot an 800 series, the only one that shot a 300 game. And I tell them that all the time. I got a kid I'm working with right now. Have you built your little thing yet? Oh, no, I keep meaning to. I'm like, well, you know what? You're never going to get better until you put in the effort to do that. Am I horrible? Am I a horrible coach because I expect them to do a little work and go through some hard times? Because in the end, it's going to make them better. It's going to make them stronger. It's going to help them to do what they want. And so it's just called discipline and training. And so, you know, anybody that's had a coach, anybody that's had a teacher that gives homework, you know, the audacity to have homework, right? Because there's a goal in place. And so that's kind of what God's doing. I love this quote. I can't begin to tell you how much I love this quote. It says this: it's not that God will give you more than you can handle, but that God will help you handle all that you've been given. That's God's promise. He didn't say, I'm not going to give you more than you handle. He said, I'm going to give you what you can put up with and what life is going to throw at you. But I'll guarantee you this much. I'll be with you, and I will give you all the strength in the world to handle whatever comes your way. There's no temptation for sure that man hasn't seen that you can't overcome. Look at Psalm 119, 66 through 68, and then verse 71. This is the longest chapter in the Bible. It's the longest psalm since it's the longest chapter. Psalm 119, you know, the shortest one's in Psalm 118. It's a fun little, I'm saying all that so you can turn there. Psalm 119, 66 through 68. This is David, and it's such a great, it's such a long and wonderful filled verse after verse, but 66 through 68 says, do good to your servant according to your word, Lord. Teach me knowledge and good judgment, for I trust your commands. Look what he says. Before I was afflicted, I went astray, but now I obey your word. Skip down to verse 71. It was good for me to be afflicted, David said, so that I might learn your decrees. It was through the struggle that David really learned about God and his grace and his mercy and the consequences that went along with the things that happened through his sinfulness. But now, because of his affliction, because of the things that took place, he's stronger and he understands God's decrees in a better way. The reason Paul uses the first 12 verses to remind the Corinthians of the Israelites' past mistakes was to teach them by example that they messed up. I mean, all of the mistakes, right? All of the mistakes that Israel made and the temptations that they succumbed to caused a lot of consequences and a lot of hurt and a lot of struggle in their life. You go back and look at the promises of God, and he says, I'll fight the battles for you. I'll go in and I'll clear out the folks for you. I'll be there. You know, you raise the rod and you'll see the power. You know, you do what I ask you to do. You live an obedient life and I will make your enemies fall out of the way. I will do everything I can for you. And they're like, okay. And then they just go their own direction and they do their idol worship and they follow after, you know, the gods of other nations, and things just start spiraling out of control. And God is still faithful. He's still with them. He's like, I gave you I gave you a way out. I gave you a decree. I opened my mouth to you. I showed you ways. I let Moses know. I let the prophets know. Here's the direction you need to go. And it was just like, you know, as plain as it could be. Go this way. And they went the other way. And then they go, oh, God, why am I lost? Why am I stuck in this disobedience? Why are we struggling? Because God goes, because I told you to go over there, and you went over there. You know, I've had teens on youth group trips, you know, where we made some rules, and they decided to go the other direction. And like, so why am I in trouble? Because you went in the other direction. I mean, I told you which way to go. You know, why are you mad? You're mad at me because I have to tell you that you can't go on the next trip because I can't trust you to make a good decision? That's not on me. I don't feel bad about it. You ain't going. Well, how can I make up for it? By doing what I asked you to do the first time would have been great. But now that you've lost a little trust, you got to build that trust back. You know, and so for the Israelites, I mean, God just constantly was telling them, hey, look at this. Look at verse 6 of chapter 10. He tells us, plain as day, now these things occurred as examples to keep us from setting our hearts on evil things as they did. So he writes his first 12 verses to remind the Corinthians not to do what the Israelites did. Look at verse 11. These things happened to them as examples and were written down as warnings for us. God provided a clear path for them. They chose to go a different path. God provides a clear path for us. And there are times when we choose to go a different path. And then we get mad at God because of the consequences for going down the wrong path. Have you ever gone down a wrong path and you had to jump over a creek or maybe fall into a creek? I remember that on a Boy Scout trip one time. Specifically, we're going to get to a fork in the road. It's going to say left to camp blah, 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 right to the falls. You need to go left. We're going to that camp. We'll go to the falls another way. The road's not good. The bridge is not good. You're going to have to jump over. And two kids decide they want to go to the falls. And they try to jump over. They hit the bank, slide in, totally covered in mud, totally wet, totally everything else. Our Boy Scout leader was a really cool guy. Mike would have loved him to death. He was a Harley Davidson guy. He only took it because nobody else would. We had kind of that rough Boy Scout pack. You know, we were the Bad News Bears type group. You know, we weren't real good at tying knots and really good at stuff, but we could trash everybody else's campsite. We won all the sports stuff. We won every one of the sports deals, but we didn't win anything where it came to cooking or setting up tents and, you know, all the stuff that you're supposed to do in Boy Scouts. But they come to camp and they're covered in mud and gross and goop and they're like, We need to change. He goes, no, you ain't changing. He goes, you're gonna wear that the whole weekend. Oh, I got other clothes. Yeah, it's probably cool. Let me see them. Brings them out. He goes, I'll keep those. Puts them in his knapsack. And he goes, you just look like that the rest of the weekend. Why? Well, how come? Because I told you to go the other direction. And you chose to go that direction. That's why I told you not to go that way. So I'm going to remind you the rest of this trip why you're an idiot. Basically, I said, you're a bunch of dorks, you know. And I mean, just stayed on them. But you know what? I remembered that so well that at another one of our trips we went to, we had two choices. And he said, if in doubt, follow the main trail. And one of my friends goes, hey, let's go this way. And I went, I ain't stepping in mud. I'm not wearing mud the rest of my trip. I'm remembering that. So Paul's saying, hey, you remember when they stepped in mud? Let me remind you why they stepped in mud. Let me remind you of what they did. And so that's what he does. Just like Corinth, right? Just like Corinth, the Israelites needed to mature and listen and be faithful to God. And so Paul is telling the Corinthians, pay attention to what they did, the mistakes that they made. They got mud on their face. They got mud on their shoes. You know, they just didn't listen. So that's why I'm writing this stuff down for you. Paul is reminding them to grow up, to become an enriched soil, right? To produce the fruit that comes with that. Somebody else said that too. Luke chapter 8. Luke chapter 8. Jesus starts this chapter, right? Again, we put our own chapter topics in there for ourselves. But Jesus, in this particular part of the book of Luke, has told the parable of the four soils, right? The seed is the word of God, and they fall on four different soils. And starting in verse 11, he explains it. Now, this is the American Standard Version. I don't use the American Standard Version very often. But when we see that word, pyrosmos, and it only means temptation, and it only means temptation. It just means in temptation and to be tempted. And somebody puts a different word in there. I couldn't stand it. American Standard Version is the only place that uses the word the right way. So that's why we're doing American Standard Version. All right. So the parable is this. Here's the explanation. The seed is the word of God. And those by the wayside are they that have heard, then cometh the devil and taketh away the word from their heart, that they may not believe and be saved. And those on the rock are they who, when they heard, received the word with joy. Remember the Corinthians received the word with joy? He talks about that a couple times, how excited they were to receive it. And these have no root, who for a while believe, and in time of what? Temptation, fall away. That's exactly what Jesus said. He said there's a certain type of person, soil, who when temptation comes their way, instead of finding the way out because they have no root, because there's no strength there, because they're not mature enough to handle it, they just fall away. This is what the Corinthians are doing. This is what Paul is warning them about, and he's worried about them. And that which fell among the thorns, these are they that have heard, and as they go on their way, they are choked with cares and riches and pleasures of this life, and bring no fruit to perfection. There's our word teleo, right? That's my favorite word in the Bible, or one of them. They don't bring fruit to perfection. They're not growing up either. They're not maturing. And that in the good ground, these are such is in an honest and good heart, having heard the word, hold it fast, bring forth fruit with patience. So some of the Corinthians have heard the word. They heard it with joy. And now they're going their own directions. And temptations are coming their way, and they're succumbing to those temptations. They're not growing up. They don't have any root. They're not maturing. And so Paul is trying to encourage them in that way. So let's go back to, we've got Jesus telling us this. You got Paul telling us this. Let's go back to the passage that Cameron read for us. James chapter 1, verses 2 through 4. To reiterate one more time why it's important to pay attention to God's word. Dear brothers, is your life full of difficulties? And again, well translated, temptations, because there's our word. Is your life full of difficulties and temptations? Then be what? Happy, right? Count it all joy, the New International Version teaches. For when the way is rough, your patience has a chance to grow. So let it grow. Sorry. So let it grow. Isn't that where they got that song? Let it grow. And don't try to squirm out of your problems. For when your patience is finally in full bloom. Now, this is what's so cool. Go back. Your patience has a chance to grow. So let it grow. Don't try to squirm out of your problems. For when your patience is finally in full teleos. When your patience is in full bloom. When it's being perfected. When it's growing and maturing and strengthening. When your patience is finally in full bloom. Then you'll be ready for anything. Strong in character. Full and guess what? Teleos. That's when you're going to be teleos, strong. That's when you're going to be perfected. That's when you're going to be mature. And it's through the trials. It's through some of the temptations that happen. It's not succumbing to the temptation. It's going through them and saying, I'm not interested. I'm not doing that. I'm not taking that route. I'm going to go the route that God gives me. And through the trials and through the tribulations, all of those things, it gives us a chance to grow. Skip down to James 1, 12 through 16. I love this because this is exactly what Paul says in chapter 9, if you remember last week. Happy is the man who doesn't give in and do wrong when he's tempted, for afterwards he'll get as his reward the crown of life that God has promised those who love him. Remember he says that? Those guys compete for a crown that's going to fade, but we compete for a crown that will last forever. That's what Paul says at the conclusion of 1 Corinthians 9. Then he gives this example of the guys who didn't compete for a crown that lasts forever, that succumbed to temptation. And then he reminds us, hey, by the way, God will always provide a way for you. Always provide a way for you through your temptation. There's no temptation that's irresistible. And so there's times when we go, wow, I just really struggle with this one thing. Then find the way that God has given you to get over that. Because God has provided that way. And I'm pretty convinced it's in His Word. And I'm pretty convinced it's in the maturing process. And I don't know about you guys, but there were things that I did when I was a kid that I laugh at now that I'm not even remotely tempted to do now. How many of you guys did something as a kid and you look back and go, why in the world did I make that choice? Emery's like, me, you're the kid right now, but even younger, right? Even now, you know, because why? Because you're more mature. You've seen, sometimes it was because of the succumbing to the temptation and the hurt that it caused your parents or your grandparents or your mate or whoever is in your life that matured you. And so God works through that as well. I mean, I think that's just really powerful. So James tells us, hey, guys, remember, when someone wants to do wrong, it's never God who is tempting him. For God never wants to do wrong and never tempts anyone else to do it. Temptation is the pull of man's own evil thoughts and wishes. These evil thoughts lead to evil actions and afterwards to the death penalty from God. So don't be misled, dear brothers. Who misleads? Who's the deceiver? Yeah. So he tells us, go one direction. Oh, it's not going to matter. It doesn't matter. And God goes, yeah, it does. Because I've already told you. And if you just stop for a second and pay attention to others in your life who may have made those same mistakes, you'll realize real quick, man, that's not the route I want to take. One more. We got James, the brother of Jesus. We got Jesus himself. We got Paul. How about Peter, too? Finally, Peter helps us understand God's going to rescue us from temptation. Look at 2 Peter 2, 7 through 9 as we conclude this morning. 2 Peter 2, 7 through 9. I love this example. But at the same time, the Lord rescued Lot out of Sodom because he was a good man. He was sick of the terrible wickedness he saw everywhere around him day after day. So also, the same way, the Lord can rescue you and me from the temptations that surround us and continue to punish the ungodly until the day of final judgment comes. You notice there's in both of these passages, there's a good and a bad. There's a good path and there's a bad path. There's a good consequence and a bad consequence. I mean, we talk about heaven and hell all the time. People go, I don't want to talk about hell. It's like, well, yeah, if we're not going there, why would we talk about it? But that's the bad consequence. People that are making decisions that don't want to go to heaven or decide that, you know, well, I don't know. I'll just do what I want to do and I'll take my chances. I have two friends that say that. I'll take my chances when the time comes. Really? You're just going to take your chances? It's just a flip of the coin. You think God's going to go, okay, Michael Ayers, call it heads or tails. Heads, heaven, tails, hell. What do you want? You want to take a chance? To me, that's taking a chance. Is that not taking a chance? You know, the gambling friends of mine go, I'll take a shot at that. Really, that's not how it works. Because God actually lays out a plan, says this is heaven. This is how you get there. This is where you go. This is it. Right? Hell? No. And yeah, there's an, do you guys know that in casinos, there's actually doors that lead out? You can actually, I've seen them. I mean, I've been in a couple of casinos. Yeah, they're pretty tricky about that, but, you know, that's one of those deals, right? You know, the secret way out. Cammie knows. Not because she's there all the time, but she's there all the time. She's actually works for a casino. There you go. All right. Thank you for sharing that. That's the perfect conclusion because that's what you do. You run, right? That's what Joseph did. Remember Joseph? I mean, Potiphar's wife's going, hey, you know, I want to be with you. And he goes, no, that would be wrong against my master and it'd be wrong against my Savior. I ain't doing it. And he ran away. And he still got in trouble for it, but God was working. God was working. One more time on this quote. It's not that God won't give you more than you can handle, but that God will help you handle all that you've been given because he's faithful and we just need to rely on him, even in the bad times.